We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Looking for hope in a hopeless world, searching for love in such hateful times. Looking for hope in a hopeless world, trying to ease my mind. A baby's born in New York City, wrapped in a blanket that's tattered and worn. Mama's doing the best she can, finding hope in a hopeless world. Her eldest son stayed in school. Listen to mama, didn't drink or use, but every job he wants he gets refused. It takes hope in a hopeless world, looking for hope in a hopeless world, searching for love in such hateful times. Looking for hope in a hopeless world, trying to ease my mind, ease my mind. On the corner stands a young girl. The home she left was from the better part of town. Her daddy did things she can't talk about. Is there hope in a hopeless world? Oh, you gotta call for a homeless man, spare some change for a soldier who fought the war. Put some money in those hats and those tins, give them hope in a hopeless world. Looking for hope in a hopeless world, searching for love in such hateful times, trying to stay strong while my mind gets weak. Looking for hope in a hopeless world. Home. You gotta listen to the voice inside you that speaks of love. Don't compromise. Realize time's passing by, there are mountains to climb. You can't be standing, you can't be standing still, no. No, no. No, no. No, 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 no. Take them all. Together in unity, the golden rule for all humanity. I'm gonna say it again. The golden rule for all humanity. Why is it so hard? The golden rule for all humanity. Teach us hope in a hopeless world. Oh, looking for hope in a hopeless world. Searching for love in such hateful times. Looking for hope in a hopeless world, trying to ease my mind, gotta find love in a hopeless world, gotta find it, oh, gotta find love in hateful times, gotta find it, oh, gotta find love and free your mind, free my mind, free my mind, free my mind, free my mind, gotta find love. Gotta find it, yeah. Free my mind, free our minds, free our minds. Yes, there's hope in a hopeless world. in a hopeless world.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm half your host, Terry Diabolic, looking at DJ Never Forget. Feels good to be back.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you. It was. I'm full of breakfast tacos.
Oh, you're in Austin.
I was in Austin. Okay. That was just Mark Vetri and Phil Roy playing live Snacky Tunes. Welcome to Snacky Tunes, guys.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Nice to be here.
And the name of that song was?
Hope in a Hopeless World.
Fantastic. So, all right. So, normally, we just do a street food piece at the top of the show. But, Mark, when you put your latest cooking book out, you did a performance with Phil about a month ago, right?
Sure, sure.
So why don't you, how about
in
this?
In New York City.
In New York City. Tell us a little bit about the cookbook, and then we'll get into how you two met.
Rustic Italian Food. This is my second book. And, you know, this one's the more user book. You know, you're going to use this, you know, to make stuff in the home and everything like that. The original one, the first one was more like the restaurant book.
Right.
You know, and this one's more like, you know, you're using this thing.
Now, is there like a practice in putting out, like, here's the restaurant book because you've eaten here for, and then is this the cookbook like you really wanted to put out?
Yeah, you know how... You know how it is when you want to write a book, everyone's like, well, you know, you have to... You know, you have the well-known the restaurant Vetri, and everyone was like, well, you have to write the recipes, you know, right out of the restaurant. Even though I was like, you know, I just want to make a little bit, something just a little bit easier. But everybody wanted the Vetri, you know, restaurant book. So I had to go with that.
Right.
For the first one.
And isn't it sort of, I don't want to say ironic, but do you find that, I feel like most people like look at the first cookbook and like, oh my God, this is beautiful because this is the food that I ate and this is how I made it. But then they're like, well, if I'm not going to actually be able to do all this at home. So do you have a book that
you
I can
know,
cook from?
Yeah, there was a lot of items that you were still able, you know, to make, I think. You know, I mean, even though there's, that's a very sort of, to refined restaurant, you know, we're still all about sort of like really, really simple food. You know, so there was, I think, still lots of items there that they were able to make, you know?
Yeah.
You just made the onion the other night, Phil Roy.
Onion crepe. Onion crepe with a, you know, truffle fondue, Parmesan.
Five hour onions.
You know? Cooking them down slow.
Yeah, what is the 5 hour technique? I know you have 10
hour technique. It's not much of a technique. Stick it on low and just kind of leave it there.
You don't touch it. Don't move.
No, you know, you mix it every now and then. You don't have to. A little bit of salt, a little bit of olive oil, but then, you know, they go from white to yellowish to brown to like sticky,
yeah.
You know.
Now, Phil, you guys are both from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
Now, Phil, you had a music event. You're a musician,
sure.
Critically acclaimed. Everyone from Ray Charles, Joe Cocker, recorded your songs, and you've toured the world, and then you decided to take the tour off the road into your house, right?
It's called the I'm Not Leaving the House Tour.
Right.
So, yeah, I came up with an idea where...
You left the house for here, though.
Yeah, I left the house. No, this was when I was in Philadelphia, in between, like, record deals, just, like, thinking, like, what can I do different? You know, everyone's trying to pretty much swim up the same stream, like salmon, play the same clubs, do the same thing, and I really loved cooking a lot, and... I was going to do it once, I sent an email out, hey, I got 14 seats, it's $100 a person, you want to come to my house? And it was sold out in like less than an hour.
That's crazy.
So it was.
And you cooked?
And I cooked, yeah.
Okay.
So then it morphed into like...
Do you remember your first menu?
You know what? I figured that I did like a couscous royale.
Okay. Something.
Salmon gravlax, though. It had to have salmon gravlax.
And the gravlax. I mean, I do.
I use, you know.
Mark, were you there at the first dinner?
No. No, we met a little bit after that.
We met a little bit after that, and the Philadelphia Inquirer was like, what's this guy doing in his house? And it was a pretty big story, and people picked it up, you know, the local NPR affiliate in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it just just came onto a life of its own, and 5 years later, almost six years now, this is still part of my life, doing these dinners. I cooked one of Mark's recipes for 20 people a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
No, it's no longer called I'm Not Leaving the House. It sounds good.
It sounds good because, you know, if you come to my house now, you guys can come over.
Okay.
And that's about it. I live in New York now, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I had a big place in Philly. I could seat 30.
Oh, man. Those Philly houses are... They're awesome. You don't find those here.
Yeah, different thing. Awesome, or you find them here for a lot.
We got the nice brownstone. It's a couple more zeros. So then, did you hear about these dinners? Or how did
he
hear
actually?
About the dinners?
You know what? He actually ate at the restaurant, and then, you know, we just had like this instant sort of like liking for one another. You
our
know?
Eyes just
our eyes just met and we're like, wow, who are you? And so I actually went to one of his things once, and then I actually mentioned, you know, I was like, listen, you know, you're working hard, man. Right?
Yeah.
30 folks there.
It's like a lot of food. Four courses.
You're playing.
So, and I'm playing. It was crazy. In between the first three courses and dessert, I would basically go up to my room, my bedroom, and lie down and just go, can I do this? Can I do this? Get through it. You know, because it's 25 people, I've just done 75 plates.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot. Sit down.
It's a lot of food.
In a small little kitchen.
No, of course.
You know? So, yeah, but, you know, I did it and... you know, Mark actually came to the dinner where the Martin Guitar Company, Chris Martin IV, who is the...
Right.
He came with his executive staff.
Yeah.
And Mark plays a Martin guitar, and I'm like, why don't you come? And
so we hung out then.
Yeah, we hung out, and then...
And then I offered him, you know, so at the osteria that we have this wine room there. You know, holds about 30 seats. You know, so I offered up, you know, why don't you have an evening there? You know, we'll make the menu there so you don't have to sit there and, like,
beautiful.
Work your
dude,
your
I just eat,
you know?
I eat.
You
and
sit down
hang
with
out.
Everybody, you know, you eat. And then afterwards,
and then
you do a 30-minute, you know. And that's when he actually mentioned, well, why don't you also, you know, Why don't you also sit in with me, you know? So then I used to sit in for what, like one song or like
one or two
maybe
songs.
One song.
And now he sits in for the whole set.
And then we started learning all of the other songs, and you know,
we went on tour together in Chicago and Boston. And
yeah,
that's places awesome. With
we
nice
up
theaters.
For Melody Gardot.
You must have ate very well on the road.
You must we have eat, you know. That's you the one thing for me. Wherever we go. You know somebody
no,
who's
of
got
course,
a restaurant.
Which is usually the exact opposite of the touring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I go out with Mark.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is like the doors of culinary Casbah opens. I mean, people love him so much. His chef friends from all over the country, they just want to feed him. And I'm just with him. It's like, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, I get to eat too.
Yeah, we eat well.
Great. We eat very well.
Well, let's hear another song.
No.
Sure.
What do you got? What do you want to play?
I wrote a tune with Madeline Peyrou, who's like a, you know, kind of jazzy blues, you know, people know who she is around here. Brooklynite. Actually, I wrote the song in Brooklyn, you know, a few years ago with Madeline. It's called Exceptionally Ordinary. A little blues thing. Oh, the pigeons are cooing outside my front door. I never heard them sound so pretty before. The neighbor's baby's crying, it's time to be fed. The morning light's calling, get yourself out of bed. There's poetry to see in the exceptionally ordinary. Well, I stumbled to the sink, let the water splash my eyes. I glance out the window, look at that war women sky. An old man is walking hand in hand with his wife, and I'm just a witness to the glories of life. There's poetry to see in the exceptionally ordinary. Oh, the sun turns light in the shadows, the sound of a bird's simple song, the smell of spring and its flowers, my baby waiting there for me when I get home. Now, who needs fancy eating when you got rice and beans, a simple glass of water, short taste sweet, there's poetry to see in the exception of the ordinary. Yeah, take it. Turns light in the shadows, the sound of a bird's simple song, the smell of spring and its flowers, my baby waiting there for me when I get home. Now most people, they don't notice what's good in this life. It ain't the love of money or the stuff that it buys. You won't find it in a store shelf or in a catalog of things. It's friendships, relationships, and family. There's poetry to see in the exceptionally ordinary. I know it, yeah. There's poetry to see in the exceptionally ordinary. Yeah, I know it, I know it, yeah. There's poetry to see in the exceptionally ordinary. Big ending with two guitars.
Big finish.
Cool.
Big finish. So, Mark, you...
Big finish.
You've got three restaurants open up in Philadelphia right now.
Sure.
And what sort of music do you play at the restaurants? Does each one have a different vibe?
Yeah, they do. The Vetri restaurant has, like, sort of... Actually, we have a lot of your music playing, Phil.
I like it.
Yeah, we have a lot of light, some blues, some softer things going. At the Osteria, we have all of this rock and roll from Italy. It's really wild.
How did you get that playlist together?
Yeah,
It's like. The guys like Nomadi and Zucchero and what's the other guy's name? Giovanotti. It's just like everyone's like, what is this stuff? And then they listen, and it's actually really really wild. And then at the other restaurant at Amis, we have just like normal. Some rock and roll playing.
A lot of rock and roll.
Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, Aerosmith.
Not your standard like mandolin classic.
No. That's going to be at the Vetri restaurant. The Mothership. Mothership has all the
classic finishings. Little,
yeah, sure. The nuances. The relaxed atmosphere. The other ones you want to really,
have a little fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's loud, too.
I mean, Philadelphia is a loud, fun party. I mean, the Philadelphia scene as a whole in the last 10 or 15 years.
It's fun.
Has really grown up.
A lot. I think, yeah. See, I opened up Vetri in 1998. And there was like...
Nothing. I mean,
There was like three restaurants there, you know.
I mean, it
Lebec
was...
Fan.
Lebec Finn.
The striped bass, and you know that was it. There was a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but there wasn't a whole lot of stuff there.
I mean, growing up,
it exploded.
Yeah, I mean the last few. Yeah,
has done a whole bunch of stuff.
What do you think? Yeah, Steven, what do you think's been the impetus for the explosion in Philadelphia culinary scene?
Well, you know, it's just you know, Steven Starr started opening up. You know, lots of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
He actually spun off a lot of guys. You got also Jose there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got what, 6 or 7 restaurants.
Amada,
now.
That new Mexican one.
Distrito.
Yeah.
And, Distrito. You got Michael Solomonoff. He used to work for me. Mm-hmm. He's got Zahav. But there's a lot of restaurants. I don't know. It's just, you know, what may have actually happened is, you know, the New York scene, you know, started. I mean, it's a lot of money to open up a restaurant here, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually working here, and when I was looking to open up something, I was obviously looking to stay here, and man, it was just a lot of money. So I actually started looking back home.
We talk about other dining scenes, like the Portland scene, San Francisco. Do you think that
San Fran's got a really cool scene too?
Yeah, man. All of them amazing, but a lot of it has to do with because it's so much cheaper. Do you think people can take more risks in Philadelphia than they can here? Or do you think it's just as competitive when you're opening up the restaurants?
I think, you know what, you still have to, you know, have it all figured out. Nowadays, you're not going to open up something and, you know, the food's good, but the rest of it isn't. The ambiance is nice, but the food's not. You have to have it all, and you also have to know. I think you have to know what the restaurant's all about. That's, you know, that's a big thing. A lot of, you know, guys open up a restaurant, and, you know, and they say that they're like the neighborhood restaurant, but they're not. And then, you know, nobody really, you know, knows what they're all about. And then no one ends up eating there. I mean, you still really have to nail it now.
Yeah. I mean, especially now when people are eating out less.
If you don't, they're not going to come. Yeah. You got one shot.
Yeah. You know? That's a lot of pressure. You know, you can put a CD on repeat, but
it's Eminem, man. One shot. That's a song, right?
One shot.
Right.
He says a couple other things.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure he sings mostly about food related things.
Yeah, you know, you just have to. I mean, you know, years ago, you were able, to, you know, to open up a restaurant, and it was all right. But there was nothing else around, so everyone ate there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all out here. All of those old Philadelphia, you know, the restaurants like what's it called,
Ralph's?
No, well that still does well because it's Bookbinders, you know.
So oh yeah,
you know, like,
is Lebecfin still around?
Lebecfin's still around, yeah.
That was the, you know, growing
that
up.
that was it
like
that
when we heard Lebecfin, or I guess Four Seasons, it was like that was it.
That's it.
Lebecfin was on some plateau way above everything else. I've still never been.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was there actually last year. It was awesome. Yeah,
they still do that whole like Sabre champagne thing
every now and when he's in the mood to.
Yeah. So would you say, I mean, Philadelphia food music scene, a lot of crossover there? Is it just you two guys leading it up down there?
I don't know if there's a whole lot of nothing else going on. I think it's me and you. We're the only ones who do
forging the path here. There's not a lot. I think that it's two things that everyone loves, food and music. And I heard about your show. You know, it's like Dinner with the Band, right?
Yeah.
So it was very, in fact, I heard about that in Philadelphia, and I was like, I know about this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. So I think it's two things that are really important in people's lives. Like, they love food and they love music.
Yeah.
And so putting them together is like, it's like a no-brainer. I don't think that, when I was growing up, there was like supper club, you know, more food and music actually.
It was a supper club.
This place called the Latin Casino in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Well, I feel like it used to be like you would go to dinner and have a dinner party, and then someone would hop on the piano or play like an accordion or sing. Like, yeah. I feel like that's old tradition.
You know,
but that's not this.
But this is actually an extension of what I lived in L.A. for 20 years. Most of my time was spent in L.A. This whole thing is an extension of getting people together and having dinner and playing music of those times of just hanging out with friends and someone grabs instruments.
Yeah. We just actually we did one of these out there. Last week.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
In L.A.?
Uh-huh. Are you guys doing any more? Now, I know you have some more dinners coming up for the book.
Yeah, but those aren't like...
You're not going to tour?
I mean, we're going to do one
he's
here, one
the house.
There.
He said it.
We're going to do one or two here, you know, here and there.
It's great.
Nothing's kind of set.
I think maybe in New York at Jonathan Waxman's place.
Yeah, we may
we
do
might play
there.
A few tunes.
Yeah.
So. Might rip out a few.
A barbudo.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He's cooking. I'll come down. It's easy.
It's fun. It was a lot of, you know, you go to enough press things where you know, that's why
it
was yours.
Fun.
It was a lot
sure.
of fun. It was like, oh, great. Like, it's not just like, here, we're going to show. It's like, no, we're going to actually entertain.
Who wants to hear another, you know, story about where I worked and all this stuff. You know, you want to hear some music.
Don't put yourself down.
Who wants to hear?
You make a lot of amazing
music. I shot the animals when I lived in Italy. And, you know, come on.
You might have told those stories a bunch of times, but it's still new to us. But you know, this is a great... you two are literally the embodiment of this radio show.
Yeah. So thanks.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we're thanks. Walking snacky around tunes. Here. You're snacking.
Sounds good. Tastes good.
I'm
snacking. You're tunes.
You are snacking. I'm tunes, dude.
We're going to have you do one more song. Philroy, just philroy.com for all information.
Yeah.
And Mark, what's the website?
The website's actually Vetri Family.
Vetri Family. And that's V-E-T-R-I family.com. And both books are out now. 10-Speed Press. Awesome. Holiday gifts.
Rustic Italian food.
We'll probably have you sign one for our mom.
Sure. Yeah, oh, yeah. I was with my mom. She made turkey necks last night. She said, if I don't say hi, and that she's a fan.
Oh, yeah?
She's a big fan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Where do you live in Philadelphia?
Ballycanwood.
In Ballycan? That's where my brother lives.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like, right on the... Like, you can see... all the downtown buildings.
Still not a great dining scene in Ballycanwood. They got Jaime's.
No, you know.
And Murray's.
Oh.
Murray's Deli.
We can do this off. Yeah, we can do this off air. We can do Jaime's versus Murray's
Marco
off
Polo's
air.
Marco Polo? Marco Polo's not bad. No?
Marco Polo?
Is that Ballycanwood? No.
It's not much. It's fine.
I know. It's
Bala Pizza. Anyway. So, what are you going to take us out on? Last song.
Song called Melt.
Awesome.
Mike's in here. Yeah, I'll get up on this. Whoops. Oh, okay. Guitars. All right, Morse code. Give me a little Morse code, Mr. Vetri, Chef of Vetri. Child with the saddest eyes, you won't talk to me, you over me, you won't take me back, I need you back, you're so alive, it makes me numb, I could survive, but I don't want to, you're the ruby, and I'm the lead. Feeling heavy, am I dead? But last night, I had a dream. I saved a life. I proved my love. I took the bullet. I killed a shark. I kissed your hand. I thawed your heart. I thawed your heart. You're not around, I'm lost. It seems all I do anymore is hit the sauce. And at the end of another glass is a drop of gin, and I'm sinking. But last night I had a dream. I saved your life. I proved my love. I took the bullet, I killed a shark, I kicked some ass, I won your heart, I won your heart. Do you want to? You do want to. 'Cause I want you, 'cause I need you. Do you want to? Say you want. 'Cause I want you, 'cause I need you too. I need you. Oh, my baby, I need you now. I need you now, I need you, baby, now. Need you, need you. Oh, but last night I had a dream. I saved your life, I proved my love. I took the bullet, I killed a shark, I healed your wounds, I thawed your heart, I thawed your heart, thawed your heart, and you melted in my arms, you melted in my arms, you melted in my arms. You melted in my arms.
Yeah. Loads of people here.
Applause. Applause comes in. Oh,
up is enough. All I wanna do is strip down. These clothes are too much. Where's my summertime? Days are getting long again. Crazy if you miss out. Say anything, even if you make it up. Looks like a false start. Feels right to be falling apart. I look to you and to me and we're fine. Lazy arms gonna swing.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
That was great.
That was really good. But as you know, we always have a musical guest as well. And today,
so then the show's over.
Yeah, the show's over. Thank you all for being here.
Hey, thanks. You've been great.
So on today's episode, we have Daedalus.
Yes, thank you so much for having me out. And that was really fantastic. Yeah, it's such a double threat kind of idea. Such a fantastic mix. I guess
once you're good at things with your hands, you're just good at things with your hands and precision.
I wish it was that way. I think the world would be so much a better place if somebody was good at one thing and that would automatically make them good at something
else. Are you not good in the kitchen?
I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, okay.
Is that no?
No, not terribly. I mean, I love tasting and I'm living in Los Angeles. That's where I'm coming from, all the way out here in NYC. And there is so much good food that I think I'm just tempted to never be in my kitchen, to be honest.
That's fair. By the way, I got to say shout out to Lior for putting us together, who's great.
Can I say something? When awesome. I was in Austin, I didn't cook once. There was just too much good food and it's so cheap. Like taco meals, Come on, don't give me that look.
Talk about truck culture, though. I mean, like, L.A. has a wonderful thing, and it's
I mean, they sort of kicked off the whole truck culture in America, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, it's like it has its... It wasn't necessarily refined when it first came out. I mean, you had your true taco trucks, mm-hmm. and then now you're seeing reflection, and then they're all individually. Like, Austin is really a different idea of that truck culture, but...
Yeah, truck culture in Austin is actually more just like trailer park.
Yeah.
They don't really have... they have a few trucks, but they're more...
I've had some pecan pilots, like some tiny pecan pies there, and that I went to some small heaven.
It's amazing. For the handful of listeners that don't know who you are, why don't you just give them a little bit of background?
Sure. I'm an electronic musician generally, coming from a pretty diverse background in jazz and classical music, but found my way to electronics being a lot of freedom there. And I am based out of Los Angeles, but I'm happy to say that I get a chance to tour a little bit. I just was here this weekend playing at Brooklyn Electronic Music Festival and the In-N-Out Festival, and just had a grand time. New York's always such a fun town. Kids just kind of go
What's
weird.
The In-N-Out Festival?
In-N-Out Festival was kind of dealing with experimental interfaces. I'm using a machine called a Monome, which is experimental enough. But, you know, really, a lot of electronic music that you see is all based and bound around laptops and stuff, and that's kind of a boring place. So I'm kind of happy that I'm using machinery that helps me break away from that. Not that your listeners can see any of it.
No, but,
but it's a pretty...
You can get it verified. Okay. But we're verified by the two of us. We're like musical notaries on this show.
Perfect.
We swear it's not just like a...
No, it's... Do you want to describe what it looks like?
Sure. It's a grid of 256 buttons on the larger one and 64 on the smaller. They light up and it allows me to manipulate samples and melodic information at my whim. But that's at its best.
So
at its worst, I'm just
250 samples on there?
No, it's like each line is a sample, and as you press any point in that line, it'll be that point in the sample. So you can really make new melodies, new rhythms.
My brain just got...
I understand. Hey, I mean, you guys are talking about food, and I bet you it makes your listeners extremely agitated at times to hear all the good things and not be able to taste it directly.
True. Well, most of the time we just talk about pizza. And I swear, if you've been listening to us... And you live in the New York area and you haven't made it to Roberta's by now, shame on you.
Yeah.
Can we say shame?
But what was the analogy you were making to your samples?
Just saying that basically it's an experience that you can hopefully taste a little bit in your ears as long as it's on the radio. But in terms of this being at a performance, it is a wholly different thing. And so, you know, hopefully people take the time to go and witness some live music and kind of get that thing going, just like they're going out to restaurants, I'm sure.
That's awesome. What I was excited about this interview is before, because when you and I were talking before about different things, you have a wide number of opinions, especially on food, which is perfect. And more importantly, one of my favorite things, coffee.
Okay, fantastic.
We have coffee here. We have our favorite place, Blue Bottle, but you've obviously toured the world and had tons of different coffee. Where is your favorite coffee from to start?
Well, I mean, I'm fully bound and tied to my Los Angeles local, which is at Intelligentsia.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, they really do it right. They have a nice diversity of single origin. And their Sugar Glider, their new offering in terms of their blend, is just beautiful. And basically, those of you who aren't familiar necessarily with coffee culture, it can be a bit of an intimidating place because you have people talking about, you know, the bitters and the fronts and the backs of things. And, you know, it's just like wine culture.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're talking about varietals that have been going on for sometimes hundreds, if not thousands of years. And basically, it's all just about a wonderful taste and a great pull. And in that way,
I can't remember. Was it this article came out about Danish light roasted coffee? It's like super light roasted, like super like. And they say that you can over roast bad beans, sort of massive flavor, but with roasting,
that's what Starbucks does. They just whack their beans with so much heat that basically you can't really go wrong, but you can't taste good.
It tastes burnt.
It really is coffee that's been attained a burned so that it can take milk and sugar really well. So basically, you can add as much milk and sugar, and it still tastes like some sort of thing.
It tastes like the idea of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, right. you have in your mind, you have this ideal.
It's a good name for a blog.
The idea of coffee?
Yeah. That's free.
No, oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I have thought about trying to detail some of these. I have done some coffee tourism, going to places like Vietnam, having civet cat coffee. I do not recommend civet cat coffee. Are you guys familiar?
What is that? Oh, is that the poop coffee?
That is the poop coffee.
I actually have a bag of it under my bed, and like the little brewer thing
that
a friend gave to me, and it's still, like, I just never... I'm sure it's fine because we've had argan oil, which is poop oil. It's the same thing.
You know, it's a novel concept, and sure, probably at one point it was something that really happened in the world, but I think nowadays it's probably
forced.
Forced, yeah. But, you know, people still eat pate.
You don't want to force poop. because that just causes all types of problems.
Just a whole factory of monkeys eating beans. Anyway, let's hear some music.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to do today a little bit differently. We're going to give Daedalus about a 10-12 minute window just to let it fly.
Let it happen.
And then we're going to do a more concise thing towards the end.
But concising?
Concising. Concise thing.
Okay.
It's a thing. Concise thing. So let's say Daedalus Live on Snacky Tunes Radio.
Someone's wrong.
Wow. Awesome.
That's really wild.
Oh, fantastic.
That's this is like, there's a handful of times where you wish that there was like a camera in here you could see that, but that was really amazing.
Thanks.
So you program each line.
It's a little different. It's like each sample is just kind of little snippets that I've taken.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the fly I'm just kind of removing and changing things. Kind of today I have to admit, like middle of the afternoon on Monday, it's kind of hard to necessarily get like a specific vibe, but the food in here is very evocative. I mean, that often is the case. Like I'm only in places for very short periods of time. You know, I'm maybe in a country for like 5 hours or something, unfortunately. Right. Like, I mean, it's beautiful to tour, but a painful experience when you're in some storied land and you're basically, you know, you're going to be there seeing the inside of a club, inside of a hotel, a
car,
you know, in some, yeah, exactly. In some order, you're just doing these same three or four things.
So oftentimes it's
the meal you have that informs what you do. You know, as much as an audience.
You know, we had talked about before where you get these machines made. It's a sustainable farm. How do you feel that factors into like modern touring? Like how as like a single artist that you can be practice sustainability when it is like, you know, your carbon footprint is huge.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about flights and tour buses. Mm-hmm. Those are not so kind. And also just at almost every venue, you know, your rider, your hospitality rider, what they call it, you know, it'll be like 24 plastic bottles.
Yeah.
This like giant thing of chips and hummus and all this stuff. And you're likely to take a bite of each. Most musicians I know, they take like a single slice and then everything's going to be trash.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that in itself isn't the best situation. I mean, obviously musicians need their comfort zones or whatever that might be. I try to fight that generally just by having as minimal needs as possible. And then hopefully, you know, when it's possible to put something like a local prepared meal, be it something made at the venue or made by the promoter or when it's right, you can go out to an actual restaurant and do it. You know, there's a lot of cities that are turned on now to sustainability and a lot of restaurants that are playing that into it. So if you just have a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of interneting, you can probably find a place, even if it is like 30 minutes from the venue or whatever.
But you usually have 30 minutes.
Exactly. You know, usually the sound check goes on for, you know, you take a few minutes, you make sure the sound's right, and then you can break out and like try to do something.
Do you feel like the promoters are more agreeable to that now? Like they're moving towards that and they understand it's like a part of the comfort and setting the stage for a good performance?
Absolutely. And you know, you find more and more often that the actual venues are tuned into it as well. I mean, you're talking about venues are most of the time a very localized event, you know, between the promotion and the actual act of going to a venue. It's like a very, I mean, so you don't always see local food, but you always see like microbreweries and kind of that, the tip of the nod. I mean, alcohol goes very well with venues, and that's how a lot of venues make their money anyway. So
right.
You're seeing moments like that.
You get a home cooked meal in Europe at venues.
Almost every show you play in Europe, there's going to be somebody who's actually like looking out to make sure your lifestyle is good. America's very behind the times on that. There's a few venues, a few promoters who really go out of their way to make you sure you're having a special time. But I mean, I played a show in Vienna a little while back, and the guy, you know, his whole mission is to make sure you go to the best restaurant in Vienna you can.
That's amazing.
And I mean, the show is almost afterthought. Like he's like, right. Oh, that's right, you got to play now. Like,
yeah, sorry, we plied you with wine, and
it's not bad, dude. It's not bad.
Before we hear one more epic from you, I want to talk about the Archimedes.
Sure,
please. And well, actually, that's all I can really say because it's so brand new that you're gonna have to explain it to.
Absolutely. I mean, so here I am making this kind of music and it's at my fingertips, but there is another element of a live performance that's going on right now. There's a lot of arguing in especially the electronic community, but also just overall music experience is a big thing. And the way it visually presents itself is tough in electronic music. You generally have one performer or just two people up on stage and they're pumping their fists and you don't really see very much else. So you see a lot of people doing laser shows and video mapping. It's beautiful, but it's almost like the performer doesn't need to be there. So thinking about that, myself and these two gentlemen in the UK came up with a visual concept that is a wall of moving mirrors, and we're calling that Archimedes. We toured through Brooklyn at the Williamsburg Music Hall a few months back. It's super fun. But basically, yeah, this wall of moving mirrors, and you're using video as a source of light as well as content. And because it's mirrors, it happens to throw it back into the room. And so the performer is in the best situation, is amplified. And it's also a human operator on the wall of mirrors. So it is into some pre-programmed movements. It's like somebody actually telling the servo motors to where to go.
I'm pulling it up because I don't, my brain. Oh man.
And the video, is that pre-programmed video, or is it capturing the crowd and putting it?
It's pre-programmed just in the sense, but it's using it more like light sources. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what's possible with all these new projectors nowadays, with these like really powerful lumen projectors. You can make a real experience, and it can have all the variation of like a light source or a LED light. But then, you know, it's one of those things too. It's like, I really would encourage people just go out and experience music. I mean, I know we all have our headphones, we all have our iPods, and it's really beamed right away into our ear space. But being in a communal situation and experiencing live music is really, really what it's about. I mean, that's how at least I was flipped on to really wanting to become musicians, because I saw shows that were, you know, people giving their all on stage, and that was all you could ask for.
And affecting the crowd and people in a conversation losing their mind.
Exactly. And that's the thing, a conversation, like the, you know, the audience is as much to do with it as the performer does.
I agree.
That's amazing.
I think that's a good place to, okay. Well, hold on a second. We need nuts and bolts, or Lior would slap me around. MySpace, Twitter, Facebook, Friendster.
Yeah, no more. Yeah, exactly. MySpace and Friendster. A little less. I would say, if you want to hear my sound directly, SoundCloud is a great source.
So SoundCloud. It's easily. I actually just ran into Anthony from Hype Machine, and we sung the praises of SoundCloud. It's
great musical discovery right now. It's, you know, it'll flip around. It might change again, but SoundCloud for now is a fantastic portal of music discovery. And my SoundCloud has just happened to be under the name Daedalus. Just in case, if people don't see it on the website, yeah, it's Daedalus.
But the one thing I would love about SoundCloud, and I think it would make it cement its place in history, if it had tour dates on it.
You know what? They're so specific in their mission, the commenting through. It doesn't have that yet, but you can go to Songkick. That's a very good website that actually I think was partially based here in New York. But Songkick, or, you know, of course, Facebook. My Facebook is being under Daedalus as well. And yeah. Daedalus Music, actually, on Facebook. So.
I think once you start doing like tour dates, it's like, well, then why don't we have photos? And like, it's just like you're here for the music.
The core mission, it's always hard to diverge from the core mission, or else you end up with Facebook and how messy that is.
Yeah.
Because that's okay.
It's just like once you start adding one thing, it's like, well, why don't we add? Well, we added that. So go there for the music.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I only use Bing. No,
all right. So we're going to get a more concise,
yeah, I'm just but nonetheless,
sonic sound journey.
Yeah, I'm going to actually start with a song called L.A. Nocturne, which originally appeared on Lior's Friends of Friends Volume 1 compilation, and then we're going to morph from there. But just in case this is the last bit, thank you guys so much for having me on. Thank you so much for doing this, because this is something that I feel like needs to be talked about, swirled around, touched and tasted more.
Thanks. So. And that is actually it. We're going to take it out on the music.
Thanks to Mark. Thanks to Phil. Thanks to Bullfrog and Baum, as always.
Yeah.
And we're out. Oh, and no, we're here next week before we go to Thanksgiving Spectacular.
Yeah, it's Liam Finn is playing live.
Oh, awesome! And let's not forget this Thursday, Death and Co. at Santos.
Death and Taxes.
Sorry, Death and Taxes release party.
Yes,
we're DJing.
Okay,
see ya. Thank you.
kiss all the pretty ones goodbye. Give everyone a penny that cries. You can throw all my tranquil pills away. Let my blood pressure go on its way. Cause kiss all the pretty ones goodbye. Give everyone a penny that cries. You can throw all my tranquil pills away. Let my blood pressure go on its way. Cause my autumn's done come. My autumn's done come. Done come. My autumn. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.